This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. State legislators are rushing to take up a number of bills in an effort to wrap up their legislative session for the summer. Lawmakers overrode Governor Cooper's veto of the budget passed by the General Assembly. Disagreements over a bill containing a wind energy moratorium have sent that legislation into closed-door negotiations, and the outcome could affect two big wind energy projects already underway. Our Capitol Bureau Chief, Jeff Tabiri, joins us now. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Set the scene for us. I know they'd like to get out for the summer and do it before the 4th, but how likely is that? What's going on now?
They have had a couple of very long sessions this week. Last night was a marathon session, went deep into the night, early morning, and depending on who you talk to, they're hoping to wrap up for at least a few weeks, a month, maybe a month and a half, by the early hours of Friday morning. So they're trying to build up to the 4th of July weekend and get out for a while. It remains to be seen if they do that. But as of now, it looks like there's a decent shot that will happen.
All right. So one of the actions that's sort of already taking place, Governor Cooper vetoed the budget passed by both the House and the Senate. That was easily overridden. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Second time in state history that the governor has vetoed a budget, the first since 2011. Of course, governors have only had vetoes for less than 20 years now in the state. Governor Cooper said that it simply did not do enough for middle class families and teachers. He was concerned about the amount of pork and earmarks within this bill. And he called it the most irresponsible, fiscally irresponsible budget he's ever seen. So he did. He vetoed it, and then the legislature came back in and overrode that veto. Worth noting, perhaps, that some of the Democrats who voted for this budget turned around and didn't vote for the override, so kind of changing course and supporting the governor's veto to some extent. But, of course, it doesn't matter because Republicans have enough votes to override without any Democratic support. And the Republicans, for their part, they say that this is a budget that it gives raises to teachers and to state employees. It puts money away, and it also lowers taxes. And they say if you look at the national snapshot of what's happening fiscally, state by state in this country, there are very few states that have been able to do all three of those things. And they say that it speaks to the fiscal strength right now of North Carolina.
All right. Well, let's talk about some legislation still on the docket. The Senate approved a bill on Wednesday. Interesting bill. It would stop wind energy projects until 2020. Tell us about that legislation and where it stands now.
Yeah, so this is a bill, a pretty significant bill that deals with energy in the state and would open up some avenues of solar throughout North Carolina. The House moved this previously a couple weeks ago. The House, as of now, wants to allow wind energy projects mainly in the eastern part of the state. There are a couple of big ones that have already begun development. However, in the Senate, the majority leader, his name is Harry Brown. He's a Republican from the coast, from Onslow County. He has long been opposed to wind farms. He says that they're a threat, actually, to military flights and military operations. We should note that the Pentagon has refuted that point. They have said that this isn't an issue. However, Brown, that's the Republican in the Senate, wants to put a 3-year moratorium on any wind projects. So right now, there's a difference in the two chambers. And because of that, this legislation goes to conference, which is a collection of a few lawmakers from each chamber, closed-door negotiations, where they're going to see if they can hash out some sort of compromise. It could emerge in the next 24 hours. It could get kicked down the road until later this year or next year, or it could die altogether. We don't know yet.
This is interesting because it's a disagreement among Republicans. What's the nature of the disagreement? Obviously, there's an economic development question here when it comes to renewable energy, and the state could lose out on a big bonus, a lot of checks, if this doesn't go through. Is that any part of the argument?
It is. It is certainly from the House. The House they're open to a wider range of solar projects and renewable energy projects in this state. And Harry Brown, has been opposed to this kind of measure. And it hasn't mattered that the Department of Defense has said, go ahead, you can have a wind farm there. We're not stopping you from doing that. The senator and some of his colleagues are trying to kick the can down the road, so to speak, and that they would like to study this issue. But proponents, advocates for renewable energy say that this has been looked at, this is safe, and the time to send it forward is now.
All right, let's talk about some bills that have been moving forward. Some of them have been sidelined, particularly in effort to redraw judicial districts. Tell us more.
Yeah, this was something that emerged Sunday night. Republicans introduced maps that would provide new maps for judges across the state. They say that it's needed because of a disproportionate population growth in urban areas. Mecklenburg County, for example, some judges, you know, are in a district where there are 400,000 or 500,000 people, where other judges are in a district where there are 150,000 or 200,000 people. They say this would create better balance, better workflow. This, we should note, originated in the House. And they say that it's time to do this. Now, the critics, of course, were quick to point out this is redistricting. This is the North Carolina General Assembly. And in recent years, they don't have a good track record here. They move things through quickly. They have a track record of illegally gerrymandering. And they've done that at the local, the state, and the federal level. So Democrats quickly spoke out against this. And there was a lot of debate on Monday of this week. And by Tuesday, heard from a lawmaker early in the morning that the bill, which had moved from committee and was supposed to be on the floor, had been pulled, and spoke with somebody in the Senate, a higher up in the Senate staff member, who told me that this was dead on arrival there. This is something that they felt was too big of a swing, too much, too late in the legislative session. And this is something that there were also concerns that the way they were redrawing the maps might violate federal law. So for now, this has been tabled. I expect it's something we will see again, perhaps a new iteration of it later in 2017.
All right. Speaking of redistricting, a decision in Asheville, legislation concerning redistricting in Asheville. Tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, this has happened several times last few years. The General Assembly has moved to, you know, enact new maps for various areas of the state. As I noted, some of those have been struck down in court and some of them have held. What they're trying to do now is draw new maps for the city of Asheville, city council districts, and they want to create better balance, in the words of the supporters, because Asheville has six city council members and a mayor, all of whom are Democrats. So there is an effort to redraw the boundaries. This was introduced by a Republican senator, Chuck Edwards, from Buncombe County, and it moved through the Senate. It came over to the House, and this has failed in recent years. So the lawmaker from Buncombe County was seeking some Democratic support, and he found that in a Democrat from Buncombe County named Brian Turner. Now, that support, of course, comes with an agreement, and the agreement was an amendment from Turner. So Turner wanted to add some lines in the bill that said he's in support of this if they are to move forward with an independent redistricting plan. Now, folks who are listening will remember that, by and large, those in power don't tend to like independent redistricting plans. So Turner's amendment comes up 2 days ago, and Chuck McGrady, who's a powerful Republican in the North Carolina House, says, you know, I support this amendment. I encourage you to vote for it. And pretty quickly, the House votes on it. It was a vote of like 102 to 12 or something like that. So they're on the record now, all of a sudden, as having supported independent redistricting, which is
But go ahead.
it's interesting. There's certainly some irony here, but this is what happens when you move policy through quickly. People don't always know what they're voting on. So the short of it here is that this bill was voted up. It needs another vote in order to become law. That vote hasn't happened yet. It's not clear if they're going to try to, you know, table it or undo what happened, or if they will actually send this forward, new boundaries in Asheville with independent redistricting, which is very interesting. And, and just, I should note, within the last few minutes, I received a letter from Common Cause, which is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit political organization that sent a letter to some federal judges. And as North Carolina, as we look ahead to later in this year, redraws legislative districts, Common Cause is now urging the courts to tell the legislature to have a nonpartisan commission, independent commission, do that because of North Carolina's recent history in how they have drawn maps. So just something interesting to note.
Right. And you talked about Chuck McGrady, who spoke in support of that Democratic amendment. He did read it. But of course, as you suggest, this time of year, all I have to hear is another Republicans for it and all the Republicans fall in line. That's part of the problem. Of course, it was part of the problem with HB 2, right? Nobody read the bill, but through it goes. This time, maybe a little bite in the pants by that same problem, not reading the legislation before you say yes. Hey, let's talk about Elaine Marshall now, under fire for allegedly helping undocumented residents with legal support. Tell us more.
Yeah, this is something that emerged back in March. Republican Representative Chris Millis, also from the coast, wants to he raised some questions about Marshall and her office providing public notaries to undocumented residents in North Carolina. He called for her resignation. She denied. She refused to do that. And yesterday they began the process of creating a committee to investigate Marshall to potentially impeach her. We should note North Carolina hasn't impeached anyone since Governor William Holden in 1870. So it's been a little while. This is something that Millis, if you look into his eyes, if you talk to him about it, it strikes me he believes that she has committed a crime and that this needs to move forward. On the other side, and there are some Republicans who I think offered some a tap of the brakes. They were cautious and they were a little bit critical of this when this emerged yesterday. They said this is a very slippery slope, Republicans and Democrats now, and just noted, I mean, this is partisanship at a whole new level, right? That's their contention. They say this is not something that has sparked a criminal investigation or a warrant or a grand jury or anything like that. And they're getting way ahead of themselves here. So that moved through committee yesterday. Is it just bluster? Was it a big shiny object for us to pay attention to? Or is it something that's going to be established by the full House today and an investigation will begin here in the next few weeks? I don't know yet, but it's certainly something we're talking about.
All right, Jeff. Well, I know you will stay with it and we will stay tuned to you. Thank you so much for the update.
You're welcome.
Jeff Tiberi is our Capitol Bureau chief, and you can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Asheville native Hope Larson is making waves in the genres of graphic novels and comic books, and you'll hear from her on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.